right now, I'd like to turn to another lesson we should learn from the original New Deal and demand from a Green New Deal, and that is massive support for artists and the works of artists and craftspeople. Now, one of the best places to learn about how an artistic sensibility guided New Deal projects is at Timberline Lodge here in Oregon on Mount Hood, where you can see how architecture, mural painting, weaving, furniture making, and carving were integrated into a public building. But there are thousands and thousands of similar projects that were undertaken all across the country, where it was not just builders and engineers who planned and executed the work, but artists as well. As Wikipedia tells us, the Federal Art Project was a New Deal program to fund the visual arts in the United States. It was one of five projects sponsored by the Works Progress Administration, or WPA, and the largest of the New Deal art projects. It was created not as a cultural activity, but as a relief measure to employ artists and artisans to create murals, easel paintings, sculpture, graphic art, posters, photography, theater design, and arts and crafts. The WPA Federal Art Project established more than 100 community art centers throughout the country, researched and documented American design, commissioned a significant body of public art without restriction to content or subject matter, and sustained some 10,000 artists and craft workers during the Great Depression. End of quote. Well, the New Deal Art Project was put together by the federal government mainly in order to give work to unemployed artists. But there's another historical precedent which is not only more democratic, but which arose from an appreciation of the importance of art, not just the so-called fine arts, but every manner of creation that aims to be beautiful as well as useful. This precedent is the Paris Commune of 1871. As Kristen Ross describes the context of this in her book, Communal Luxury, The Political Imaginary of the Paris Commune, for 72 days in the spring of 1871, a worker-led insurrection transformed the city of Paris into an autonomous commune and set about improvising the free organization of its social life according to principles of association and cooperation. Ordinary people in a major European capital were exercising powers and capacities normally reserved for a ruling elite, until the commune was savagely put down by the state. But let's look at what the commune accomplished in the realm of art as a lesson for our Green New Deal. And I'll be quoting off and on from Kristen Ross's book. The first thing that was done was to make artists an artistic production independent of the state, and of course of the patronage of wealthy elites. At a meeting of artists, the demand was made that artists be allowed to administer the arts themselves, that they assume control of museums and art collections. Artists should be entrusted to manage their own interests. Some 400 artists attended the meeting, and they were not just painters and sculptors, but a rallying of all the different kinds of artistic intelligence together thought of as one. Architects, cabinet makers, and even shoemakers were thought of as artists, producers whose works were to be valued not merely for their utility, but for their beauty, for the pleasure they gave to the senses. Painters and sculptors were not to be making objects to be privately owned in the homes of the wealthy or placed in museums and galleries away from ordinary people. The demand that beauty flourish in spaces shared in common and not just in special privatized preserves means reconfiguring art to be fully integrated into everyday life, and not just sequestered in special places called museums. Art would no longer live this poor, thin life among a few exceptional men, as one communard put it. Some of the exhilaration of the project of making art lived, not superfluous or trivial, but vital and indispensable to the community, is captured in this short text from the time called Art and the People. Ah, if the painters and sculptors were free, there would be no need for them to shut themselves up in salons. They would have but to reconstruct our cities, first demolishing those ignoble cubes of stone where human beings are piled up, rich and poor, the beggar and the pompous millionaire, starvelings and satiated victims and hangmen. They would burn all the old barracks of the time of misery in an immense fire of joy. The liberation of art means eliminating the separation between what is useful and what is beautiful. It means treating beauty as an essential element of what makes something useful, whether it be a house, a piece of furniture, an office, or even a factory. What makes beauty so important that we should design society in a way that encourages the creation of beauty in everything we make? It is simply that beauty is part of what makes life good, not just living in beautiful surroundings, but also the ability to create what is beautiful. Many of the places we go to and go through are banal and dull. Think of most of Southeast 82nd Avenue here in Portland, or insides of many office buildings, or downright ugly things like slums, battlefields, jails and prisons, slaughterhouses, multi-lane highways, the interiors of the homes of many very poor people who lack the time, resources, and often the heart to envision and create beauty in their lives. A world bereft of beauty is depressing and breeds resentment. As Marx points out, unlike other animals, human beings make things even when they have no immediate need for them, and indeed they truly produce only in freedom from such need. Human beings produce in accordance with the laws of beauty, says Marx. But capital is not human. From its point of view, the point of view of the investor, there is little or nothing to be gained by making beauty part of the world they build, aside from their corporate offices and private homes. Beauty is an invitation to love. A beautiful world is one we can love. In promoting a Green New Deal, we need to be inviting people to join in creating a beautiful world they can love, not just one capable of surviving the rigors of climate change. We say a better world is possible, but it will be possible only if people love the vision of that possible world. So the world the Green New Deal proposes has to be beautiful. I'm Clayton Morgridge for the Old Mole Variety Hour.
I wish I could give all I'm longing to give. I wish I could live like I'm longing.
And that's Nina Simone wishing she could be free to do all the things that she can do, following my commentary on the need to include the arts, which would certainly include music, in the Green New Deal.